Does the name Carson Gully mean anything to you? Gully was a celebrated figure in Wisconsin and at UW-Madison in the mid-20th century, but has been largely forgotten over the years. In a recent piece for the Wisconsin Magazine of History, our guest tells the story of Gully, who was a well-known university employee, chef, instructor, and broadcaster who traveled the state and the nation giving lectures and cooking demonstrations.
Gully was also an African-American and broke barriers in just about all those things, but also faced segregation and other forms of exclusion at both his university job and throughout his travels. In addition, his fight to find a place to live in Madison led him to become an advocate for equal housing, though he wouldn't live long enough to see the full effect of the changes he fought for.
Here with us now is Scott Seiforth. He's Assistant Director of Residence Life for Academic Initiatives at UW-Madison. His piece, The Life and Times of Carson Gully, appears in the summer 2016 edition of the Wisconsin Magazine of History. Scott, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Rob and Judith.
So, as you say in the introduction to your piece, Carson Gully was a celebrated fixture and figure in the mid-20th century, but his story has really kind of fallen by the wayside. How did you first find out about him?
Well, of course, working on campus for the last 20 years, I knew about Gully because there was a building named after him. In fact, the first building on campus that was ever named after an African-American and the first building named after a civil service employee. But the biography that was posted in that building was the biography that they used when they named the building in 1965. They named the building after him at the height of the civil rights movement. The Board of Regents voted to name it the month that Johnson passed the Voting Rights Act, and the Watts of riots broke out, and the next week they named the building after Gully. And the way that they passed it through, because it was political to name a building after an African American,
they got complaints
in Madison.
About it.
Yeah, they did. And the way they did that was that the biography that they put through was a biography that did not talk about any of his boundary breaking. In fact, the opening sentence talked about him as the servant to students' appetites. And that's largely the biography that has been put through. That's the biography that hung in that building for the next two generations. It's largely how students knew about him and staff knew about him. And So I got onto the story because the man who hired Gully was a man named Donald Halverson. And people don't, after Halverson died, they gave a bunch of his papers to University Housing. And prior to giving them to University Archives, my boss said, "Hey, you like history. Do you want to look at these before?" And in this box was the letter that I quote in the article, a letter that Gully wrote after he retired to Don Halverson, thanking Halverson, a white man, for all of the ways that he was supportive of Gully's career as an African-American at a time when people were not. And that made me want to learn more.
Well, we'll talk about his career at UW, but let's talk first about his early days. He was born just before the turn of the century, so had a very interesting and in some ways very stereotypical experience of African-Americans at that time. Where was he born?
So he's born in Arkansas in 1897. Parents, his father was born into slavery. His father was a sharecropper, and Gully, and his father wanted Gully to have a life different than himself, and so he helped Gully get an education, a high school education, at a time when most people in America did not receive a high school education. And Gully became a teacher, and he taught, you know, African-American students in their African-American schoolhouse in their hometown, and he was a sharecropper for several years, and he was a great teacher. In fact, his teaching, you know, what he learned is in terms of being an educator, he would use for the rest of his life. It is what he became, was an educator. And he would use those skills until he died. But he knew that he wanted a different life than sharecropping. And so as a young man, he left Arkansas and went to try and find something different.
And so he was not trained as a classically trained chef. How did he get started cooking and working in kitchens and restaurants?
Right. No, he wasn't trained at all. In fact, he started out in construction, and then he got a job as a dishwasher, and the cook at this little greasy spoon in El Dorado, Arkansas, where he was working, quit. And the owner said, "Can you cook?" And Gully said, "Yes." And then he spent years.
And could he, or was he just faking it till he made it?
I think some of both. He knew enough, right? And he decided, and he liked it. And so he spent a number of years moving up. You know, he worked in Pullman Porter Car. You know, he worked in the railroad, and then he worked at resorts. He worked up, and finally he was in some very high end hotel restaurants in St. Louis, this is in the mid early 20s and 24 or so, and a woman who ran a very large prep school in St. Louis had some of his cooking and hired him to run the dining facility at Principia Academy. And that's where he really learned to do the kind of, you know, three meals a day at high quality for large volumes of students.
Is that where he was making 1,500 pot pies on a Sunday?
That was at a resort, a summer resort in New York.
I just remember that because I thought, wow, I can barely pull off one pot pie.
I know.
We're talking with Scott Seiforth. He's Assistant Director of Residence Life for Academic Initiatives at UW-Madison, and his piece, The Life and Times of Carson Gully, appears in the summer 2016 edition of the Wisconsin Magazine of History. So how did Carson Gully then end up in Madison, Wisconsin, and with a job at UW?
Well, he was working at this prep school, which was a 10-month job, and that closed down over the summer. And so during the summer, he would go work at resorts. And he was, in the summer of 1926, he was at a resort in Tomahawk, Wisconsin, Essex Lodge. And Don Halverson, who ran the dorms here, was the head of the dorms, stopped in the lodge unexpectedly and had some of his cooking. And rather than leave the next morning, he stayed a whole nother day. And he went out fishing with Gully, and he stayed up late talking, and he got up early the next morning, and before he left, he told Gully that he didn't have a job for him, but that if Gully would keep himself available, the next opening he had, he would give to Gully. And Gully, rather than go back to this job, a very prestigious job at Principia Academy, he went and got a part-time job in Milwaukee and hung out in Wisconsin and waiting for Halverson to call. And Halverson called in December of 1926, and Gully came, and he stayed there for the next almost 30 years.
Well, we also are interested in Carson Gully because he was also a person in broadcasting, and he hosted cooking programs on both radio and TV at a time when very few African-Americans made it on the air, let alone hosting a program. How did that first come to be?
Well, you know, he had become the story of his celebrity. He was such a well-known celebrity in his time. You know, and celebrity is one of the things that fades over time, you know. But he was a well-known person, and it started with his cooking. He was well-known on campus, and he got hired in 1936 to create a class for cooks at Tuskegee University in Alabama, one of the, you know, centers of African-American culture and learning in the United States. And then he was asked to replicate that during the war for the Navy, asked him to teach all the cooks in the Navy. And then he taught classes here afterwards. And all this teaching led to speaking engagements around town, and people heard how good he was, which led to radio. And in fact, his first, from what I can tell, the first broadcasts were on WHA.
Exactly. And actually, we have a clip of Aileen Hazard, who was the host of the Homemakers Show, talking with Carson Gully as her guest.
A couple of weeks or so ago, Carson Gully, chef at the University Dormitories in Common, gave us some interesting suggestions on the use of herbs and vinegars in food. Today we've asked him to speak especially of salad dressings. Well, we know he has some specialties which he himself has worked out. Mr. Gully, there is variety in salad dressings, isn't there?
Definitely. Salad dressings alone is the secret of success in creating a wide range of variety of salad combinations.
Well, he certainly seems comfortable, and he has a very warm presence, as Aileen did, too. Was he well-received in general?
Oh, people loved him. And, you know, so the radio led to television, and then he spoke all over, you know, the state. He was asked to speak all the time. In the 1950s, he was asked to give presentations 1 to 3 times a week, and he spoke everywhere in the state. He was in Marinette, up north, and he was in Hazel Green in the south. He was in Sheboygan and Cuba City and Ellsworth. He was in St. Paul, and he was in Chicago. He traversed, and he spoke so much that he had a carrying case made for 75 of the spices and herbs he used most, you know, and he had the trunk of his car converted to be a refrigerator. And he did so at a time when we had, the state was, you know, many towns in the state were sundown towns. Mm-hmm. African Americans were not allowed to live in towns. They had to be out before sun. They could work there, but they couldn't live there. They'd be out before the sun went down. Manitowoc had a sign out front for many years that said, N-word, make sure that the sun doesn't set on you in Manitowoc.
So he was a welcome guest and someone who had been invited into a community, but there were communities where he couldn't stay in a hotel, or even working in Madison, he faced very serious housing discrimination in trying to buy a home.
Right. He tried for many years, starting in the mid-40s, to purchase homes, and always had any attempt was always scuttled because we had segregation laws in Madison. There were restrictive covenants in deeds that said that you could not sell your home to a person of color. And he fought this for a very long time. Finally, in 1954, he bought a home in Crestwood, which was a new subdivision, 5 miles outside of town, and which was run as a cooperative. And the people of Crestwood, some complained about the Gullies being there, and they held a vote, which the cooperative can do, about whether or not to allow the Gullies in. And so in 1954, in September, they had a vote, and they ended up voting 60-some to 30-some percent to invite the Gullies in. It was stood in contrast to a lot of what was happening in America at the time, where you had a lot of race riots in the North. I found examples in Milwaukee, and of course, there's ones in Skokie where you had hundreds, sometimes thousands of whites rioting, sometimes for days, sometimes the National Guard having to be called out for similar events in other towns.
Well, thank you so much for sharing the story of Carson Gully with us.
Thanks for having me.
Scott Seifert is Assistant Director of Residence Life at UW-Madison. His piece, The Life and Times of Carson Gully, appears in the summer 2016 edition of the Wisconsin Magazine of History.